Hey everyone, it's Cam Hurt, host of the Best Show Ever podcast, and we have got a second season coming out very soon that I am very excited about. We've got some very cool special guests, including musical acts that we all love, like Karina Reichman, Daniel Donato, Jake Brownstein from Eggy, Rick and Peter from Goose, and many more. Tune in for new episodes dropping on Osiris Media March 5th on the Best Show Ever podcast.
Hi, listeners. I want to tell you about a cause that I'm involved with at Heritage Radio Network. HRN is celebrating its 15th year, and to celebrate, we're deepening our commitment to giving voice to the next generation of food system storytellers, and we need your help. Our internship and fellowship programs help activate new possibilities for underrepresented and underestimated young people through experiential journalism, audio engineering, and production training. Through these unique programs, HRN helps food equity stewards build essential workforce readiness skills that expand their potential and foster economic mobility. Please consider supporting these critical programs. And with a minimum donation, you can be entered to win a dinner for two at an amazing restaurant in one of eight cities and tickets to a concert at a great venue in one of those cities. We have incredible partners across the country who have donated, as they also share our passion for helping to educate the next generation of food system storytellers. Check out heritageradionetwork.org/15 to donate and enter to win today. That's heritageradionetwork.org/15 to donate and enter to win today. And make sure you donate before March 31st. Thank you.
Osiris.
Good day. It's Isaac, co-host of Inappropriate Happiness. We have put a lot of thought into today's episode, and I am joined, as always, by my co-host. She values good communication. She's going to be on late night television, Karina Reichman.
Hey, communication is key. I bugs. How you doing, baby?
What's going on? You have such exciting news.
I got some hot goss. People seem to be as excited about it as I am. I can't believe it. I'm going to be on late night television next week, the 6th, the 7th, and the 8th of September.
With Mr. Seth Meyers.
On Seth Meyers. Yes, correct. My pal Sid Butler plays bass in what they call the 8G band, which is the house band, and he is going to be unavailable. And I was asked to fill his large gaping shoes. And I am so thrilled. And I said a resounding fuck yeah. I've known about this since the first week of May. So it feels really good that it's actually coming to fruition. And I get to actually go and do this, which is super epic. I'm just a huge fan of I love showbiz. I know that sounds funny because I'm so scrappy and so whatever, but I love the idea of going and there's hair and makeup and lights and people with walkie talkies and everybody's clear, 3, 2, 1, and it's live, you know what I mean? There's something about that I've always liked. And before I was even interested in becoming a musician, in my head I was oh shit, I'm gonna be on SNL, you know what I mean? That was sort of my sort of conception of all of that. I just love sort of the excitement and I love comedy. Late night television sounds real good to me. So I'm super stoked to do this and I get to play bass. And, I went in May and shadowed Sid, the bass player I'm replacing, for a day, which was really interesting. And, Fred Armisen was on drums, which is awesome. And again, just a comic and a dude I respect and love so much. And I think he's so funny and he's such a humble, sweet guy, So it was really cool to be a fly on the wall for all that and see how they do it. It's all improvised, basically, where we just come in at 11 in the morning, write a bunch of quote-unquote songs, which is cool, and you refer to them as different things, you name them stupid stuff so that that A section, B section, that's Martha Stewart Copeland, which was an actual name of a song that they created, and it's all, both commercial breaks and guest walk-on music, and of course, the intro, the theme song, and the outro theme song.
So that's really cool.
Yeah.
That, I don't know if that's particular to Seth's show, but you have been on television before in a couple of different instances. And I take it this is the first time. This is the format.
Big time. Big time. And I was really kind of shocked that that is the format. You know what I mean? And of course, they've sent already over like a few kind of stems and like, you know, seedlings of songs, basically. But I know that we're going to come in every day and write more. And then when you're standing up there, you have in your monitors in, and the musical director, who is also the keyboard player, he will say into a talkback mic, "Hey, Martha Stewart Copeland, 3, 2, 1. And then the drummer counts you off and it's on. You know what I mean? So it's just really kind of feels like this extremely live environment in some funny way, even though you like, you know what you're doing, but it all kind of gets pulled together every day and it's all unique, you know, which I feel like I'm pretty well equipped for, playing a lot of improvisational music and thinking on my feet a lot and, you know, fucking around and seeing what happens. So I'm really excited to do that on national television.
Well, I am excited to watch this. I am not a big late night TV person, but
sure.
I do really find it sort of calming and soothing when I do watch it. I know it's, you know, it's kind of a regular thing for many Americans to tune into their favorite host. And, you know, I can't believe that next week I will be doing that and you'll be playing bass.
It's so
live
shocking.
On the show.
Oh, dude, thank you. Yeah, it's funny, you know, like with obviously Jimmy Fallon has The Roots, and that's a very cool late night music, you know, element. And of course, Reggie Watts is on that other one with James Corden. And it's a really fun kind of thing across the board where everybody has their own band, like, you know, specific music. They all have banter between the people. I think it's really awesome. So, and yeah, like you mentioned, I've been on TV two other times. One was when I was 19. I played at Radio City Music Hall in the backing band for an act on America's Got Talent, where I wore a flame-spewing helmet on my head and played a Rickenbacker bass for, how do you even describe those guys? A child metal duo, where there was like a 6 or 7 year old girl screaming metal style, and she was amazing, and her brother Izzy playing drums. And then it was the best time ever because I got to go to Radio City, you know, multiple times like a week to rehearse with these kids, you know, and it was super, super fun just to get to go to that iconic venue. And especially at my age, I was just like, wait, this is the best thing ever. I'm like clocking in and it's Radio City and I'm rehearsing this one song with these like 6 and a 9 year old or whatever. It was so funny.
And the 6 and 9 year old, were they big metal heads?
They definitely, you know, for as big as you can be into anything at that age, you know,
sure,
what I mean?
Right.
But like, yes, they were definitely into heavy hard rock music, which is cool.
That must have been fun in and of itself.
It super was. And the dad too, it was great. Like, you know, he was really, really cool and wasn't overly stage dad-esque, you know. And it was really just great to work with them and to, like, you know, get that experience. It was everything. And of course, to perform on stage in front of Howard Stern, like, and
totally.
Nick Cannon, like, introduces you, like, you know, it's just like so kitschy and amazing, like, you gotta laugh. And then sparks are literally flying out of your head.
I was about to say, I don't know if you've mentioned that part
yet.
Yes. That you were wearing a like flame shooting helmet.
Literally, it was. I wish they let me keep that thing, because what the fuck did they do with it? Like, I would have really put that thing to good use over the years. Yes, a flame spewing helmet was on my head. That was excellent. And then a few years later, Dan Cantor actually put me up to this. For those who don't know, he's a large Fish fan and was Justin Bieber's guitar player for a long time. And he's gone on to be musical director, you know, guitar player extraordinaire for lots of pop acts, including Julia Michaels. And I played he put me up to the task, basically, of I played two tunes with her on the Today Show on acoustic guitar. During the Baker's Dozen, for those of you heady enough to care about that small fact. But it was one, I only missed two nights of the Baker's Dozen, and one was the night before this because I didn't want to fuck myself up, you know, and be in another headspace, you know, because I had to wake up at 4 in the morning to be on this TV show. So that was great. And yeah, this is my third TV appearance. I'm so stoked.
Well, I remember with that one, they also like sort of changed around the plan a couple of times. You were going to be just sort of miming guitar. And then you like needed to learn these parts that, you know, are pretty specific pop parts with, you know, certain notes picked out on the guitar and certain ways in which things should be strummed and...
Big time. And thank God you're here, my archivist, because that is fucking true. And I completely forgot about that. Oh, my God. It's true. They were like, okay, you're just going to be pantomiming.
Right. Pantomiming.
And that was cool by me, whatever they wanted, you know. And I was like, oh, cool. So, like, you know, I know the song enough, but I don't have to, like, know it. And then it was like, just kidding, you're playing everything live. And I was like, oh, shit. Like, now you got to really learn.
And I think Julia Michaels even threw you some shade for, like, cursing on set, right?
So, this is what she said to Dan. Well, yeah, I mean, it's funny. It's, you know, listeners of the show are no, you know, stranger to the fact that, you know, sometimes I've been known to curse like a sailor once in a blue moon, you know? It's just sort of part of the whole package here. But, you know, waking up at 4 a.m, bullshitting with the people I'm meeting, it didn't register with me, but I'm sure, you know, the word fucking came out before most things I said. Oh, fucking hell yeah. Oh, dude, no, it's a fucking blast. What a fucking pleasure. I don't know. Probably things along those lines. And she said to Dan Kander, who got me the gig, she said, who was that girl on guitar? She was awesome. She cursed a lot. Which I
really,
you know, I took that one for sure. I was like, wow. Nice.
High compliment from Julia Michaels.
Totally. You got to love that.
She's awesome.
So I'm going to try to tame my sailor's mouth at 30 Rockefeller Center this week. And
I think it's probably pretty embraced there. I mean,
it's got to be. You know, it's got to be.
We'll find out.
Yeah, we will literally find out. So that is what's happening in my world, iBugs. I'm very stoked about it. And I'm just, you know, people are texting me and calling me out of the woodworks, you know, with super, you know, stokitude about this, which makes me super stoked because I am too. And I love that people, like, you know, kind of get that this is a big deal for me. So I'm super excited.
Totally. And I mean, this is a really impressive resume already of television gigs. But, you know, I mean, and maybe you need to think on this for a while.
Tell me.
If you were to configure a late night show.
Sure.
Where, I don't know, maybe you host and you're the musical guest.
Ugh.
Who else is on set with you? Who else is, you know, chatting it up with you on the couch, in the band, doing a sketch or two, you know, any specific bands, people?
Dude, I mean, an absolute wrecking crew on that show. My show would be balls to the wall. Great question. I mean, you know, Adam Sandler.
Adam Sandler, okay.
I will pull him out of quasi-retirement. Just kidding, he's certainly not retiring. But I'll be like, yo, Adam, what are you doing? You want to chop it up with your girl? No? Trey. Clearly, in the band when he's in town. Other than that, you know, maybe Trent Reznor.
All right.
And then other than that, you know, Beck. I just
Karina
called Beck.
Loves the 90s.
Dude, she does. I'm deep. I'm really entrenched in 90s culture, which is unbelievable considering I was born in 93, wasn't conscious for any of the 90s. But still steeped in nostalgia for it, baby. Yeah, no, I mean, I would love that. That would be the dream of all dreams. I don't even know how I would, you know, begin to construct that. But, you know, I would host and then I would be like, all right. And then I'd run over to the bandstand and play myself out.
Yeah, right.
Which should be the best part ever. So, yeah, I'm super stoked. And actually, we have to shout out one of our listeners. Bless him, forget his name, but somebody commented on my post about this saying, let's just hope Seth doesn't do a closer look at why there was no podcast last week, which I thought was a very funny comment, and kudos to you. Kudos to you for having that very funny comment. So yeah, that's what's happening next week, but let me tell you, Isaac, some very polarizing, interesting, complicated, extra fun for me stuff.
See, I was going to position it as just one of your successes.
Oh, great. Oh, great.
We can go with complicated, controversial, too.
Well, for me, it was a wild success, a wonderful time had by my entire crew. You know, it was great for me, as a dear friend of ours, Shelley, would say. But the Sacred Rose Festival that happened this last weekend at the SeatGeek Stadium in Bridgeview, Illinois, just a mere quasi half an hour from Chicago. Inaugural festival, you know, beautiful time. And I can only speak to the Sunday because that's when I was there, you know. And this has been sort of a hot button topic on the internet in our small community because the first day, allegedly, you know, again, I was not there, can't fully speak to it, but, you know, festival goers alleged that there was an insurmountable amount of bleed between the stages at this thing. And, you know, there was Punch Brothers in my lettuce, and there's lettuce in my Punch Brothers, or whatever it might have been, you know, and sets were overlapping. And basically, there were three stages that two of them were next to each other, like parallel with each other. And then there was one other that basically faced those two. And that was a shame for everyone involved. So much so that the next day, the festival posted on their Instagram and their socials saying, "Hi, we're sorry. We heard you. We agree. We were there. We are taking all measures we can to, you know, make this better, basically." And then they went and staggered the sets from then on. Even my, you know, my set was supposed to begin at 1:15. It got shifted to 1. And everybody else's things got jostled around to minimize this problem. So that was day one. There were some other complaints that, you know, they seemed to try to get under control, whatnot, blah, blah, blah. Everybody says Saturday was great for the most part. Am I right?
Yeah, that's what I heard. You know, I was following along a little bit at home, and I was very interested in the Philco,
yes.
Phil Lesh and Friends with Jeff Tweedy and Nels Klein of Wilco on Friday. It seemed like that was a all-around thumbs up. People were stoked on that.
Big time.
They
big time.
Played Via Chicago, the Wilco song, as well as one of the tunes off of Mermaid Avenue, Airline to Heaven, which is Mermaid Avenue, amazing album. It's actually two volumes for people who don't know. Wilco and Billy Bragg. Shout out to my kindergarten teacher, Jawan, who played this album a lot for us in the classroom.
Wow.
I know.
Dude.
This album is deep for me.
High five, Jawan. Why you got the coolest kindergarten teacher? That's amazing.
Kids jumping around to Hoodoo Voodoo.
Holy shit.
Laying on the floor to California Stars.
Ugh.
It was really
so entrenched at an early age.
Totally entrenched at an early age.
Amazing.
But yeah, so that is, you know, one of the big collaborations of the festival that a lot of people were excited about, and it seems to have gone over very well.
Love that. That's huge. And we super celebrate that and the festival goers for, you know, putting that together. Of course, you know, in and around the great city of Chicago, home of the Wilco. And, I mean, it's very exciting to see Jeff Tweedy and Nels Klein digging deep into the Dead catalog.
Totally.
Really very cool.
Tweedy singing Franklin's Tower and Ripple. You got Carl Denson.
Dude.
Amazing man.
Amazing man.
Singing Shakedown Street.
So great.
So that's just a really cool band. And, yeah, they closed out one of the stages on Friday. And then, as you said, on Saturday, the times were moved around. And this, if you are a jam band aficionado, casual listener, somebody who likes this kind of music, likes to see it at a festival in the summer, this is a day for you. Because we got Le Special and Sun Squabby opening up the day, two acts that are going on tour together this fall. Then Lotus, the Disco Biscuits, two sets of Humphreys McGee, Soundtribe Sector 9, and Goose, all on one day.
Really a beautiful day of music, if you like this music.
Totally.
And we happen to.
We happen to.
So this is great. This is great stuff.
We got Margot Price sitting in with Goose for Don't Do It. We got Corey Wong sitting in with Goose for Hot Tea.
Very cool. Very cool.
A excellent set by the Disco Biscuits. They have been very, very good at putting up the soundboards of their shows very shortly after the show, sometimes even before, you know, midnight It's quite impressive, like 20 minute turnaround.
Wow.
So I got to listen to this set. I listened to it the next morning, Sunday morning, and just these guys are writing new tunes, playing their hearts out. I love them. You love them.
We love them.
And Karina, let me ask you, I saw some pictures of the Vegas stage where you played.
Sure.
And it seemed like there was a something cool with the lights in terms of a kind of border or two borders around the stage. Is that correct?
Totally correct. It was almost as if, you know, picture like, you know, it was framed almost like a TV set or something like that. You know what I mean? Like a few basically like truly like picture frames, you know what I mean? That like bordered, and they were able to project, or like they were like LED screens, you know what I mean? So it wasn't projections, but they were like, you know, there were projections, I guess not, I don't know what the fucking word is, but you know what I mean? Like where you can actually show stuff on these screens. And it was really, really cool. And, you know, people utilized them in different ways and in really cool ways. And it looked awesome. My stage was super epic. The Vega, very, very cool as such, you know. So yes, that was utilized beautifully. And then, you know, the canopy stage also had a very beautiful look to it with, you know, as the name would state, you know, sort of a canopy. And there was like sort of this different colored, like, I don't know, shrapnel. I don't know what it was, but it was all hanging down and it looked really, really cool. So all in all, you know, the stages looked very appealing. And there was a lot to like, there was like, you know, that sort of, it looked like Rainbow Road from Mario Kart, which I feel like they had this sort of thing at a Fish Mexico or two, you know, where it's just like, you know, a gradient of rainbow hanging overhead that you walk down through. There was a laser dome that was really incredible where the DJs would perform, and like it was visually stunning. Pretty amazing. Pretty amazing. And then it turns to Sunday, right? I consider myself extremely lucky that my band got to play at all, but we did. We opened up the aforementioned Vega stage and had a wonderful set. Really, really fun. So grateful that anybody on the third day of a festival would come, you know, on the Sunday at 1 o'clock to see me or anybody, you know, it's amazing. So I was super stoked about that. And then my good friend Blue Da Tiger, also a blonde bass extraordinaire, got to play right after me on the same stage. And all throughout that, we have Nicole Atkins, we have Holly Bowling on the other stages, we have Maggie Rose, we have the Kitchen Dwellers, a lot of music happening, right? And then right after Blue Da Tiger, everything stops. And this is where sort of the, you know, quasi-drama of the day begins, where it was complicated, I think, for festival goers to understand, you know, there was lightning in the area and there were high winds, right? But no precipitation for the most part. So basically the festival instructed everybody, you know, music was done, to, you know, retreat to their cars and figure this out. And, you know, they would give, you know, the thumbs up when we could, and for the artists to retreat to their dressing rooms, you know, and everybody would be notified when this would be fixed, you know. So for those, that was like over an hour, well over an hour, maybe two, you know, where everything was sort of at a standstill. And again, my experience was very different, I think, from the average concert goer, because, you know, we were in our green rooms with the other artists and could hang out and chat with people, you know, friends old and new. It was a very convivial atmosphere back there, even though it was an ominous one, you know. So that's what I went through. And I know concert goers had a different experience where they had to kind of evacuate or quasi evacuate. It was unclear like what was going on exactly. But then the great Hiatus Coyote came back and played only for about a half an hour around, I want to say 5:30, like something around those lines, you know. And the Infamous String Dusters could only play for about a half an hour. It was very complicated all around. Dawes then played about two songs. The Wood Brothers played for a very short amount of time. And then, boom, everything stopped again. And again, there's not really any precipitation. It like looks overcast, but, you know, apparently there's lightning in the area, which, by the way, we come, you know, I stand definitely in support of the festival here, where that's not their call. It's bigger than them. It's about the safety of the patrons, the safety of the fans, the safety of the artists, the safety of the staff, the crew, blah, blah, blah. They have to halt things when the lightning gets too close. You know, we're literally standing on these metal structures playing. It could go very wrong very quickly. We're looking at the Midwest. You know, weather rolls very, very fast through that sort of part of the country, you know? And so after Hiatus Coyote and after the Woodbridge, all that stuff basically shut down, Kamasi Washington did not get to play. Joe Roos is Almost Dead did not get to play. Green Sky Bluegrass, Krungbin, these bands all did not get to play their sets at this festival. And that was a heartbreak, you know, people traveling far and wide to see these guys. And it's, you know, it sucks for everyone involved. It sucks for the promoter. It sucks for the bands. It sucks for the patrons. And it sucks for people who paid to get there. And I mean, I just feel really bad that people went through this and traveled far and wide to get there and didn't get to see their favorite acts. And even, you know, when we were leaving, after all this was said and done, me and my band, we were walking for a second to get into a car to take us back home. And there were these people who were just showing up being like, wait, what's happening? And we're like, oh man, I'm so sorry. You know, it's canceled, you know, due to weather. And these people like looked up at the sky, kind of rightfully so. And they're like, what are you talking? It's a beautiful night for a concert. And I couldn't disagree with them. You know, it was one of those things where it was sort of nebulous in terms of like, you don't really understand what's really going on here, because you're not looking at a satellite of where the lightning is striking nearby. I don't know, you know, so very complicated. This has been, you know, wildly talked about online, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I probably only see a small portion of it.
Sure.
It does seem like there is a lot of commotion. And like you said, a certain rightfully so.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's also a first year of a festival, and it doesn't have the sort of goodwill with its name really associated with it yet. I think people are very careful about where they're spending their money these days. And, you know, after other festivals of different sort of genres, and, you know, have kind of made headlines for how poorly things have gone, or, you know, how wrong things have gone, I think people are also a little bit skeptical of promoters. I don't know
sure.
if you feel like that's true as well.
I think that's definitely true.
And, you know, I think it's definitely important to, you know, be open-eyed and aware of all that can go wrong. And it's also, you know, like you said, not really the promoter's place to make the call in this case. You know, the things get shut down for weather reasons. Those calls are made by the city or the state, right?
Big time.
Yeah,
big time. And it's, they have to abide by these things.
To, yeah,
it's, you know, and I'll just say on this level, you know, I completely understand where people are coming from in terms of the complaints, you know, about the sound bleed and a few other things that were happening, you know, in the first few days. But it seems like the general vibe of like, you know, the weather canceling acts on Sunday was sort of like the icing on the cake for some people.
Yeah.
And the straw that broke the camel's back.
Totally.
And that, I mean, you know, I was only there Sunday, so I can't, you know, tell you what it felt like to come day in and day out and have, you know, these sort of disappointments as a fan. So I really understand that on some level. But at the same time, all I'm going to say is, you know, Michael Berg, a very dear friend, a very excellent concert promoter who, you know, started Hulaween, you know, puts on North Coast Festival in Chicago at the same place, does a million things. That guy cares more than just about anybody I've ever met. And, you know, it is heartbreaking for me as his pal and somebody who's worked with him for many, many years to see sort of the way that this has been received online by many. At least, you know, because I know it's not easy. And I know that this is a person who, you know, puts on shows and cares about them more than most. And I really, truly, truly believe that. And I know that he and his entire team tried to mitigate all of this stuff as best they could. And it just, you know, a lot of it was met with complaints by a lot of people. And I stand in support of you know, the promoter in this, just because, you know, I think obviously some things could have been handled better, of course, but you're learning on your feet, you're doing it in a whole new place, and nobody controls the weather, and nobody, it's not his call to call the music, like we said. It's, you know, when there's, you know, lightning in an 8-mile radius, that's, you're done, you're just done, you know. It's the safety of the patrons and everybody. Thank you for keeping us safe on the Sunday. And I really hope this festival, you know, lives on for another year or 20, you know. Let's see it come back better than ever next year. And let's iron out these kinks. It all happens, you know. And I feel terrible for all my friends who didn't get to play.
I have heard that Bob Weir controls the weather, and he's notably absent from this lineup. So,
oh, good point. Good point.
Maybe get Bobby in there next
year. So maybe Wolf Bros next year. Maybe just Bobby and John Mayer, like they just did in Montana.
Well, with this in the rear view, a lot of the bands that played this festival have announced returns to the area.
Which is beautiful.
Specifically at the Riviera Theater. We have 3 nights of Joe Russo's Almost Dead on December 2nd, 3rd, and 4th. They will finally get to play.
Fantastic. That'll be the redemption song we all needed, because it was met with a lot of sadness that they did not get to play their set on Sunday.
Before that, 2 nights of Umphrey's McGee, same place, November 11th and 12th. This is going to be the Bowl event.
Bowl, baby.
Three sets from Umphrey's. Football theme.
Great.
I went to one of them at the Capitol Theater once. It was very, very long.
Love that.
And then closing out the year at said venue, the Disco Biscuits, ringing in 2023 with 3 nights, December 29th, 30th, and 31st. That will be a throwdown.
Damn. So basically, the Riviera Theater is where you want to be if you like all this music. And that's very, very cool. I mean, it's great when they're like, you know, these radius classes. For a, you know, a festival and a band and blah, blah, blah. And then it's like, all right, well, time to announce our next Chicago show. And what better timing, because we didn't even get to play our show, you know. And it's that's really great. And we're very, very excited for everybody in Chicago and everybody traveling in for the shows. And speaking of seeing shows, Isaac, you and I have seen some pretty sweet shows in the midst of all of this somehow. I mean, last night, I feel like I got to see something very special. Two very special things, but one in particular, because this band has not played since 2006. And the band is called Praxis. And Praxis is comprised of Buckethead, Brain on drums, and Bill Laswell on the bass. And this, I mean, Jesus Christ. I'll tell you, you know, for me, like, I love what I saw last night. This all happened at the Sony Hall in Manhattan, New York, just, you know, a stone's throw from Times Square. And I'd actually never been there. That was wild. And they're playing 2 nights tonight. I mean, they played last night and tonight, which is very cool. And this was a real treat. It almost sounds like Primus. It almost sounds like a Dissonant Fish jam. It almost sounds like lots of things, but really it just sounds like Praxis. And it was an amazing confluence of things that I like. Buckethead, holy fucking shit. And, like, you know, to me, Buckethead, this most impressive stuff he does, it isn't, you know, he's so shred-tastic, you know, he might as well be, you know, Steve Vai up there going absolutely crazy, but it's, he plays slap guitar. The fuck? Like, what are you doing? It's the coolest thing ever. And he has the, you know, the kill switch on his guitar where he's literally just tapping a thing with his right hand and then tapping the guitar and, like, fretting it with his left. It elicits an incredible thing. It was really wild. Brain on drums, absolutely demolishing it. And Bill Laswell sitting down, killing it. He's old. I love that guy. They made some absolutely incredible music last night. I can't believe I got to see their first thing since 2006. It's absolutely incredible. And, you know, the band used to have Bernie Worrell in it. and Bootsy. Like, it's crazy. Like, you know, and they put out a lot of very, very weird albums that are very, very cool in my book and definitely not for the faint of heart.
Well, there's also a live album from Bonnaroo 2004.
Yeah.
Tennessee 2004. Those of you who like the live stuff,
yes,
that would be a good place to start.
Great place to start. Way to point people in the right direction. That's good stuff. Anyway, I feel very stoked to have seen that. I hope they continue to do more. They are really an amazing trio. So that was very, very cool. And then I went to see Brad Meldow, solo piano, at the Village Vanguard, part of his residency. Talk about something completely different.
Yeah.
You know, he is, in my book, and I think many people's books, one of the greatest piano players to have ever lived. I really...
Definitely, no question.
...stand by it, you know? And he is a genius when he's accompanied by people, and he's a genius all by himself, and he led us through a 90-minute set, which, by the, you know, for those of you who don't usually go to the Village Vanguard, this is, you know, that's a long second set, you know? And normally it's about, you know, an hour and an hour, or sometimes 75 and 75, but 90 minutes there is long. And to do it completely by yourself, no frills, no strings attached, it was an amazing thing. He played everything from the Beatles to Bob Dylan to Brahms and to Gershwin. He was completely all over the map. It was absolutely beautiful. And, you know, I don't know. To me, I just really love when you see a master of something like that, like, it's just a special thing. And you just are watching somebody who means the fuck out of every note they play. And I love that.
Love him.
Incredible.
The Highway Rider album from 2010, one of my favorites.
Strong.
It is beautiful. It is a great example of what he does. And like you said, a total master. We saw him earlier this year at Town Hall with the Joshua Redman group. And I mean, this whole run at the Village Vanguard is sold out. And that is pretty unusual. Usually the first sets will sell out. Sometimes the second sets on the weekend will sell out. But, you know, Wednesday night, usually you can walk in around 10 p.m. and
get in.
But, you know, he sold it out on his lonesome, just him with a piano. Wow.
Playing the Steinway.
Very special.
Making it rain.
To be
very,
in that
very
room.
Cool. Very much so. And it was pouring rain, and people were still hovered around outside at 10 p.m.
See, you got to love that.
It's really pretty cool. So that was very, very cool. And Isaac, you have seen some very cool music recently as well.
Yeah, you know, I sort of took dive back into music that I was very fond of, like in middle school, early high school.
Yes.
And got to see the Decemberists.
Huge.
An excellent band playing at Central Park Summer Stage. And for me, like growing up in New York City, I listened to the Decemberists all the time in Central Park on my iPod. And, you know, it's so weird because both of the bands I saw last week, it's like very strange to go from loving a band and thinking you'll never outgrow them. And not that I've outgrown them or really has to do with age, but like at some point with these bands, I just didn't really continue listening to the new music they put out.
Sure.
So for me, The King Is Dead was the last like Decemberist record I like really learned and like saw the tour of and things like that. But it was beautiful to see them in the park. They are a kind of sneaky live band.
Sure.
Like a band that you think, oh, you know, maybe it's good, but you don't really think of them as necessarily being about the live spectacle. And it's subtle, but they are a very, very good live band. And Lin-Manuel Miranda of Hamilton fame and a lot of other things, too, did a little spot singing one of the verses of the Benjamin Franklin song, which he wrote, I guess, in the Decemberists put out as a part of the Hamel Drops release of songs from Hamilton that didn't make it into Hamilton.
Wow. Wow.
So that was very cool.
Very.
And then on Saturday, I got to see My Chemical Romance at the new UBS Arena in Long Island. On Long Island, and that was a band that I fell off of after the Black Parade, but man, did I used to love and really, you know, kind of devote my listening time to My Chemical Romance.
Sure.
As a young person. theatrical music. I love music that has a kind of theatrical component, and the Black Parade was kind of a concept album that they put out in 2007.
I think that's correct.
And one of my favorite albums, and Three Cheers for Sweet Revenge, one of their earlier records, those two big albums for me. And the show was part of this reunion tour that's gotten postponed a bunch because of COVID, and they really came out swinging. And Gerard Way is a very compelling front man, in my opinion, and he, you know, it gives it his all night after night, and this was absolutely no exception. He was totally ravenous and out for blood, and I am going to try to catch more shows in this reunion tour because this music is very, very special to me. And like I said, it's not that I've necessarily feel like I've outgrown these bands. It's just that, like, with a band like Phish, they can put out new music that I don't even like and I'll pay attention to it. Yeah. But for whatever reason, with My Chemical Romance and the Decemberists, I don't know. Like,
sure.
It's not that my taste has changed because I go to these shows and I love it, but I just, you know, I've been given these two opportunities last week to get to revisit this music, and it was very, very special.
So cool. I mean, I think it, you know, we'd be remiss to not mention, you know, if you were like Isaac and I, you know, 11, 12, 13 years old when that My Chemical Romance record came out, it completely dominated the counterculture of the time. And if you were like us and interested in such things and got enraptured in such things, you know what I mean? It was unavoidable in the best way, sort of. And it definitely, it absolutely permeated like this very, it wasn't niche because it was ubiquitous almost, but it was still sort of for the freaks, the outcasts, the sort of, you know, there was this emo movement that was happening then that was unavoidable. It was, you know, what we had, you know what I mean? It was sort of where rock and roll had gone at a certain point, you know, and My Chemical Romance sort of represented this huge moment of that, which was, I thought, awesome at the time. As it, like, as you say, as a 12-year-old, I was enraptured by those records. 100%.
Yeah. And I guess part of the thing is, like, when you're in it, you're so in it.
Yeah.
That, like, if you kind of deviate from it a little bit, it's easy to fall out of it.
Sure. 100%.
Which, again, doesn't mean I like it any less.
Very much so. And I also really hope to see one of those shows. And I know I will be brought right back to 6th, 7th grade hearing those songs again. And like you say, Gerard Way as a front man, beyond compelling. Just I even saw photos of him and I was just like, oh my fucking God, like this guy was such a hero to so many you know,
totally.
Kids. He really was.
And they're
is.
From New Jersey.
Yep. They and from Long Island.
After.
Oh, sorry. You mean My Chemical Romance. I thought you meant the kids who love them.
Oh, no. Yeah. No. My Chemical Romance are from New Jersey.
Yes.
And the kids who love them are from New Jersey and Long Island, definitely. formed after September 11th happened as sort of a. I don't know, they felt like they needed to respond with music, and it feels like they do continue to respond to feelings of isolation, feelings of sadness, feelings of confusion and fear
big time.
Through music. And they've put out a single since this reunion, but I'm hoping for new music from them because those feelings are still around.
They sure are. They sure are. And the kids need a hero, you know?
Totally.
It's a beautiful thing. It's really, I love that you saw that. And I really hope to see it just because it represents such a moment in time and kind of, you know, in counterculture, really. So very, very cool. Isaac, we've seen so much music. And you and I, we're seeing two different shows tonight for the listeners. Isaac is going to see the Mountain Goats.
Who I've never seen.
Who he's never seen at Webster Hall. I am going to see Roger Waters, who I have seen at Madison Square Garden. And we're delighted, man. It's just a great, you know, fucking the dog days are over, but the good times roll on. And it's really, really fun to see all this amazing music in our home state of New York. And I mean, we'll wrap about those shows next week on this podcast.
I look forward to it.
You and me both. And I will be playing this Friday. Levitt Pavilion, Westport, Connecticut. boom, baby. It is a free show. It's happening in the evening. You need to reserve a ticket, though. So go to, you know, Google Levitt Pavilion or whatever. And, you know, you reserve a ticket. You show up. It's free. It's so bucolic looking. It's on the water. It's in this beautiful sort of, you know, pavilion, as they say. You know, it really looks like it's going to be a lovely place to play. And I really can't wait to be there. My band has actually never played a show in Connecticut yet. So I can't wait to, you know, make my CT debut, and I can't, that's going to be super fun. And then the following day, I am hightailing it to Portland, Maine to play with my dear pal, longtime collaborator. And by that, I mean, I've been in his band for 6 years. His name is Marco Benevento. I'm super stoked. We're playing something that my band actually played last year. It's called Ghostland, and it's the Ghost of Paul Revere, a band that actually has announced their imminent breakup, but this is sort of their last stand. They're from Portland, Maine, I believe, and it's them, it's Marco Benevento, it's his Golden Messenger, and this is all happening at one of the greatest venues I've ever played in my entire life, called Thompson's Point. Also on the water, also incredibly bucolic, and just a beautiful place to see live music. I wish, you know, I spent more time in Portland, Maine. The food, this venue, it's a beautiful, beautiful thing. So I really look forward to that. And I hope to see people at both things. And then I'm going to hightail it back to New York. I'm going to say some aums and some Hail Marys and just hope that I don't fuck anything up on live television next week. And then we'll see what happens after that, because that's the only thing on my mind. So those two shows, Seth Meyers, we are super stoked, and yeah, and our dear friend and producer, Marlo Shankweiler, she is heading out on tour with her band, Melt the Band, and they are going to be playing all over these continental United States, and you know, you should check out their tour dates, you should check them out, they're a phenomenal live band, hot on the rise. You should be so lucky to catch them in these smaller clubs while you still can. And we really hope wherever you are, you look them up. They get my highest endorsement, Isaac's highest endorsement, and go see them. They're playing Webster Hall here in New York in October, and they're playing really all over the place. So go catch them. You won't regret it. And we're so thrilled to have Marlo produce the podcast. And we are also so thrilled to know Brian Brinkman, the other man behind the scenes. Thank you, Brian. You make everything possible. Thank you, RJB, the messiah of Osiris. Where you at, baby? Let's go out to dinner. We can't wait to chop it up with you in person, which we have not yet done. But thank you for putting us on. And I think that brings us to the end of our road here, Isaac. What do you think?
I think that's right.
Dude, wonderful to chop it up. For those of you asking where we were last week, thank you for your interest. I really appreciate that you listen, that you pay attention. It's so funny. Like, you know, you feel like you're in you know, it's just me and I Boogs on the couch over here, which it is. But people actually expect this and listen to this, and it means the world to us. And like, we really, you know, appreciate you tuning in and following along and, you know, caring about what we've got to say. It's an amazing thing. So thank you. And we're here to stay now. Thank you so much for tuning in, and we will see you next week while I am in the middle of Late Night with Seth Meyers. Take care, everybody. Cheers.
Yeah, I never learned to camp. Can't even pitch a tent. I've been jumping turnstiles, hailing taxis with intent. Do you need directions? I bet it's not where you're from.
Osiris.
This is Krista Makes, guitarist and vocalist for Less Than Jake, and host of Krista Makes a Podcast, a songwriting podcast where every week I'm joined by an amazing guest to break down the writing, recording, and release of one iconic song from their career. In our giant evergreen back catalog of episodes, we've had rock legends such as Dee Snider and Huey Lewis, punk rock favorites like Mark Hoppus, Fat Mike, and Brett Gurewitz, and up-and-coming artists of today such as Liz Stokes of The Beths and Genesis Owusu. We've had guests from all genres and styles of music, and I guarantee that if you peruse our back catalog, you'll see several episodes that'll make you say, man, I gotta hear that. Whether you're a fan of music or a creator of music yourself, you'll take away a whole new appreciation for the songs you know and love. Krista Makes a Podcast is available for free on all the places you could possibly listen to podcasts, and new episodes come out every Monday.
Hey, this is Dewey Halpas, host of Peer Pleasure on the Sound Talent Media Podcast Network. Join me each week as I explore another long-form conversation with one of your favorite musicians, actors, comedians, or creatives. From Chino Moreno of the Deftones, John Gorley of Portugal the Man, to Fat Mike from NoFX and Ian MacKay from Fugazi and Minor Threat, we go all over the map. From Fall Out Boy to Slayer, Peer Pleasure has it all. Check us out now on Sound Talent Media.